Somewhere across the bifrost, way up high.
Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. My name is Sung Soo, and joining me in a moment, as always, is my dear co-host from across the pond, Pat Dunford. And today, we're just sleeving it and heaving it. That's all we're doing. By popular request, just no topic, just sleeve it, heave it. But first, Pat, how you doing?
I'm doing great, TT. I've got my pack of sleeves in one hand. I got my bin in the other. Let's see how many cards we can get into each.
Yeah, but before we do that, we do have to pick a winner for our YouTube competition. Someone gets a Juggernaut box. So, Pat, I need you to come up with a number between 1 and 248.
All right. Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop. 67.
I will have to find out who this person is, but it looks like Fighting for Frequency, which is, I've just got a link to the Discord somehow. So, hey, I'll reach out to you. You're going to get a Juggernaut. We'll figure that out. Hey, congrats. Hey,
congratulations.
We do appreciate anyone subscribing, watching the videos on YouTube. We're still obviously starting with that. Look for the main pod to drop on Tuesdays, Sleeve It, Heave It to drop on Wednesdays, Two Ferns to drop on Fridays. And as soon as I finish editing it, our first character focus should be going up soon, too. So you can check all those out in the playlist at youtube.com/AcrossTheBifrostMCP. Someone had Across the Bifrost. It was shocking. It was sad. We were disappointed. So we're Across the Bifrost MCP. So there we are. All right,
what
Pat.
What does the MCP stand for?
That's a great question. So we've got Sleeve It or Heave It today. I've got a couple Sleeve It or Heave It cards. There's a theme. Let's see if you can get the theme, okay? The first one I want to cover is Battlefield Medicine. A shield card that's active. During a shield character activation, it can spend two. It's med pack, okay? It's just med pack. But the last line says, you can't take this in a roster or squad with the med pack team tactics card. So Pat, what do you think of Battlefield Medicine?
So, TT, this is the first of our many Sleeve It or Heave It tactics cards for today, and I'm sorry to say that already you've got the rule summary wrong.
I did?
It's not just med pack, it's better med pack.
Oh, it's a special condition. That's right.
Yeah, remove a special condition and three damage for the low cost of two power with the same restrictions as med pack, right? Range three in your activation, and you can't have both. What do I think of this? Well, I think this is a pretty easy card to sleeve because Medpack is considered to be one of the best and most ubiquitous cards in the game, and this is a better version. So this card seems pretty good.
Yeah, the card seems amazing, right? And the other thing that people have mentioned, obviously, is it frees up your other restricted slots. You can end up with Battlefield Medicine, Brace, and Field Dressing or something like that, right? So it just does definitely free up some space there. The special condition, I don't know how I missed that. That's actually pretty nice. Yeah, it's just a really good card. This one might be a fast one.
It's very good. One thing I'll say, though, to go a bit deeper on this, it's not strictly better in the sense that you do have to be a shield character to play the card. So assuming you have some unaffiliated picks in your team, there are circumstances where a med pack actually might be more tempting for you. And that would be if you're playing shield, but you're always planning to play certain unaffiliated characters, keep them unaffiliated, which is something that we might come to in a future tactics card, right? And you think they're the ones that are going to be using that power to medpack people, right? So, for example, if you're planning, part of your game plan is to have Thanos unaffiliated, you might say there's a lot of value to Thanos being able to medpack himself. And Thanos cannot use Battlefield Medicine on himself.
Now, I assume that you have to remove the damage and the special condition from the same character. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the card says, remove up to three damage and one special condition from this character or an allied character.
Yeah. The or is the key part there. Okay. Yeah. Reading's hard. That's a good point about your unaffiliated people. And I guess we'll get to that a little later because Shield has some interesting ways to make people affiliated, and we don't have their full affiliation list, obviously, at the time of recording this. But I do think this is an easy one. If you're going to be playing Shield, it's a really good card.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And the fact that it gives you what is essentially, barring the corner case I just mentioned, it's essentially an upgrade to a card that's already restricted and really popular. This seems to me to be like a windmill slam. I'm going to be considering taking this in all of my Shield rosters. Maybe there'll be some where I just can't fit it in because there's plenty of great cards to choose from, but it's always going to be under consideration.
Now, the card isn't exciting. It's not like super fun to talk about because it's kind of already been out there, but that doesn't change how impactful it will be in games, right?
Right. And of course, you said it already, but because it's not restricted, you can combine it with other restricted cards. And it reminds me of the days prior to the restricted list where it was very common to see teams running Medpack plus Patch Up plus Brace for Impact as a way to massively reduce damage. And it's interesting that Shield has this option.
Yeah, I mean, it's they have a lot of powerful tactics cards, is what I'll say. So it's pretty cool. You will be flush with... Convocation, I think, is the other one that comes to mind that has a lot of tactics cards, but I think the general quality of the Shield ones just end up being higher than Convocation, in my opinion. And narrowing it down to five is going to be rough. Like, I don't know... It's going to be rough decisions. Like, I'm struggling in my current Avengers roster to figure out the, you know, I normally like, oh, I just want all seven of these. And like pairing it to five is difficult. I have no idea how Shield players are going to do it.
Yeah, that's tough. Perhaps if we have some time at the end, we can try and do that. But it's not an easy exercise, that's for sure. So
I think you're being optimistic about time at the end here, Pat.
We'll see. I suppose not every card is as simple as Battlefield Medicine, right? I think the next card we should speak about is the Initiative. Because this one already has impacted our review of Battlefield Medicine, and I think we need to get it out there because it's going to impact plenty of others as well. So the Initiative is an unaffiliated reactive card, but it is still a Shield card. And that's because when you include this card in your squad, you choose one non-Shield affiliated character and they become a Shield affiliated character. If your squad's using the Shielded affiliation, when the chosen character is deployed, it gains a gadget token. And the gadget token can be spent once in the game for one of three effects. The first is it lets you reroll one of your defense dice when you're defending. The second is it lets you remove a special condition. And the third is it lets you move an objective between characters within range one of each other. So, very interesting card. It lets you make any character Shield affiliated to combine with other tactics cards. So the example I gave with Battlefield Medicine, you could have a Shield affiliated Thanos healing himself with Battlefield Medicine. It also gives you this very versatile set of options. None of them are very powerful, but you get to pick whichever one is useful given your circumstances.
So I think you basically break this card down into two halves, right? You've got becoming a Shield agent, and then to me, you've just kind of got like gravy on top of that, right? The gadget token is cool. It's cute. It's but honestly, it doesn't really factor into my evaluation of the card too much. Getting that Shield affiliation tag is huge, and I mean, right now you could theoretically say that every character is like Shield affiliated, right? It just takes a tactic slot, and that can be monstrous, especially when we get to the other cards we're going to cover here, right?
Yeah, and to be clear, there's two benefits that I can think of. TT, tell me if there's more, but I think there's two benefits to being Shield affiliated. The first is you get to have that character play all of these sweet Shield affiliated cards, which they otherwise wouldn't get to do. And the second is they count as affiliated for team construction, and that's why this card itself is not Shield affiliated. So I can have a five character team that is two Shield affiliated characters, this unaffiliated character, and two other unaffiliated characters, and that would be a Shield affiliated team. It would turn on Nick Fury's leadership and let me use all the tactics cards.
Yeah, I think that's a point that hasn't been talked about a lot, at least on the discords that I'm part of, is I think that's as impactful, giving you the flexibility to take any unaffiliated character and help you suss out this core, especially when you factor in a four threat leader, right? You can take your favorite two, whether that's Bullseye, Toad, Wong, whoever your favorite two is, and just make them affiliated if you really wanted to, right? You could also take a giant beater with it and and end up playing them that way. You could take Hulk if you want Hulk and She-Hulk or something silly like that. You have a lot of flexibility there. I think this card's incredible. And it just kind of doubles down on the I have no idea how you're going to pick your five.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because making any character affiliated gives you loads of flexibility in how you build your teams, which can be really important, right? If you're the kind of person that likes having specific characters that are good in specific circumstances, or has a pet character that you always want to play, then this option gives you a lot more freedom in your roster construction and lets you take the characters you want and fit them into that jigsaw much more easily. It also potentially lets you take more characters that have like a higher raw power level. You know what I mean? You have less restriction in regards to characters you have to include to get access to shield stuff. So there's a little bit of a power boost there, I guess, in theory. How do you rate the gadget itself? I agree with you, it's not the value of a full tactics card, but how good is it?
I think the first two effects, I'm like, okay. The last effect I value very highly because it's an effect that is hard to get during the game, right? Reroll defensive die and removing a special condition, while good, are fine. I personally don't value them that high. If it was just that and a tactics card, like, it's whatever. Whenever we're able to manipulate objectives, it definitely piques my interest. And I think that's very powerful.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. It's one of the things that I think is good about this effect is you only get one of them, but you get to pick which it is depending on your circumstance, right? And I agree with you that the one that is most interesting to me is being able to move objectives, because that's really rare and valuable. And this card is not as good as mission objective, but it's not strictly worse, right? It lets you move an objective without any power cost, which mission objective doesn't let you do. So anytime you might want mission objective, you might feel really good about this card just for the gadget, right? You might say, well, this is as good as this replaces mission objective for me, and I don't feel bad about that at all. Plus, I get to have an extra affiliated character on my team. So I really like that aspect of the gadget, even though it's maybe not as good as mission objective. It has its moments for sure. And then I like the fact that, yeah, I can't rely on a single reroll or removing a special condition coming up and being relevant. But there will be games where they're super relevant, right? There'll be games where you look down, you're like, oh, my Hulk has been staggered, but I've got this gadget and now I get an extra action. Or if I can just roll one more defense dice, then my character won't get dazed and I can activate with them. Guess this is worth a reroll. You know what I mean? And when those situations come up, you're going to be really glad that you've got the gadget.
Yeah, and I think you're hitting on what I like the most about this card is its flexibility, right? You don't have to tag this card onto a character when you build the roster, right? It's when you select your team. So when you need that affiliated 2, you have an affiliated 2. When you need an affiliated 3, you have an affiliated 3. When you need an affiliated 6, you have an affiliated 6. Sorry, this card doesn't work with Dormammu. It's actually, I mean, it does work, but you end up playing Dark Dimension. The flexibility of it, I really like. I understand what you're saying about it being a baby mission objective. Obviously, the restrictions on it of like this only works on your non-shield agents, I think it's pretty big when you're planning your legacy virus play. But I still think it's a really good card. The gadget rule at the end, I agree with you. I definitely value that higher. But to your point, there are times when I would pay for just a random reroll, or, you know, Hex is the one that always comes to mind, where I never want to shake Hex, but it can just be a pain in the butt sometimes. And there's a whole bunch of things like that, right? Incinerate also comes to mind, right? Bleed. So it definitely has relevant play.
Yes. It has lots of relevant situations. So one of the things I'm wondering about this, TT, if I'm taking this card to make my unaffiliated team affiliated, right? Going back to the 5 character example, obviously it could be a different number, it could be 4 characters, 2 and 2, but whatever. I've got multiple unaffiliated characters and I'm making one of them affiliated with this card. What are my decision points in regards to deciding which of my multiple unaffiliated characters do I play this on? Because it doesn't matter which character I choose for legality purposes, right? Any one of them ticks the box to make my team affiliated. But what might make me pick, say, Toad versus Black Cat versus Hulk?
Yeah, that's a great point. And you cover 3 really interesting ones here. The first one's like Toad doesn't really benefit from the final gadget rule. So the only reason I would consider Toad personally is if I needed that affiliated 2. But let's assume that the threat values don't matter here. I don't personally rate it that highly on Toad. Toad doesn't have overly impactful activations for me, so I care less about him removing the special condition. And honestly, he already has Slippery. Mm-hmm. Like, when he gets attacked, I'm hoping his 5 hit points last, and if they don't, then he dazes and he has 3, right? Hulk's an interesting one where I could see you taking it for the special condition on Hulk, because that's really relevant. I need to get as much activation and pounding out of the 6 characters as I possibly can. It's also interesting stacking the rerolls with, Hulk, not Puny Banner, being able to reroll everything, including skulls. And then I can, you end up with a really high roll afterwards, right? I'm going to roll 4 to 3 dice of defense. I'm going to reroll any that I want, and I'm going to reroll one more. It really helps you live through that thing. I also tend to value defensive dice on Hulk lower because he does have that 20 stamina pool. So to me, it would come down to the manipulation. Black Cat's an interesting one, though, right? Where she can go out and automatically grab stuff, and being able to move stuff off of her or onto her is really powerful. Mm-hmm. So I do agree with you. There's a lot of decisions to make when you choose to take this card, and you really need to think about it to get full value out of it, as opposed to just tossing it out there. Even for the slow ones, like ships or scrolls, being able to move the thing around can be super relevant. You know, you don't know who's going to get it, but you're able to go up and take it from them. And then something like Wakandan Herb, right? You might know, okay, well, this character is going to go grab the herb, and then I want the secondary character, maybe Miles, to take the herb from them and then web swing over to my place, right? So there's a bunch of factors to consider, and I think it's going to be crisis/team/matchup dependent. What about you, Pat?
Yeah, I agree. I really like that the gadget exists on this card, because maybe I would take the card without the gadget, but then it wouldn't matter who I played it on, right? And the gadget makes me go, oh, what cool synergies do I have? Who might use this the best? And I mean, the obvious things, I think you said all of the best points, and I want to reiterate some of them. But for me, definitely characters that can steal objectives, like being able to move objectives off themselves, right? And I think Black Cat's a great example of that. Characters that are really tough, like to be given objectives, and they can use the gadget for that as well, right? They can take objectives. Characters with improved defense dice, like Count Blanks, love to reroll an extra defense dice, right? And there's plenty of characters with improved defense dice, either through Count Blanks or Wild Effects and whatnot. And characters that are especially high threat value, especially like removing conditions. So there'll probably be characters that have a combination of those things, right? That you feel really good about giving them the gadget. For example, like Corvus Glaive, right? If Corvus Glaive is in your shield team, you'll be really glad that he has better defense dice in case you need to save him. And he's a character that doesn't necessarily want to go out of his way to pick up an objective, but maybe you want to give him one in the right circumstance, and you really don't want him to get staggered or shocked. Like, you might feel really good about giving it to him. And I agree that generally speaking, the cheaper characters are going to be less useful, but it's cool that there might be times where you decide, actually, no, this is exactly what I need for my two-threat character to shine.
Yeah, and you might put it on Toad, because this allows Toad to give an objective he takes, right? So if your first play is like, Toad's going to double move, interact within range 2, I'm going to survive the first attack, slippery back, and then I want to give this thing to someone else. Sure, you might end up taking it on Toad, but that's something you're just going to have to plan as you go through it. So it bothers me that we haven't been going alphabetical. We are 17 minutes in at 2 cards. I still think it's adorable. You think we're going to have time at the end. So
okay,
is there anything else we need to talk about for the initiative?
The initiative's a big one, right? And we need to keep it in mind with all the others. The last thing I want to say is, between initiative and battlefield medicine, that's 2 shield-affiliated rays to remove conditions. This team's really good at removing conditions.
That's true. It's definitely something to consider. So next up, defensive prototype, which is basically web barrier. I don't think anything was added onto it, right? Did I miss something here?
I think it's exactly the same as the Web Warriors card web barrier, where you pick 2 shield characters, they spend a power each, and while they're within 3 of each other, they can't be pushed, thrown, or placed, and characters moving between them have to climb, and they draw a line around themselves that blocks line of sight to enemy characters.
So this is a sneaky card for a few different reasons. You almost never see it, but it can be a really strong and impactful card on certain crises or setups or scenarios. So just because you don't see it a lot out of the Web Warriors doesn't mean it's a bad card, because we've talked about this a lot. If you take a card and transport it out of affiliation, you get totally different results with it based on the characters you see.
Yes.
So I like defensive prototype, or excuse me, I like Web Barrier. And it may, when I was going to play Web Warriors, I think it was you that talked me into taking it for things like Gamma, where I end up with, like, I want this middle, I'm just going to Gamma on 2 different characters. And it's a good card. Taking this with the shield roster that we're kind of guessing around now, the ability to make anyone shield affiliated, I think this card could be sneaky, really, really, really powerful.
Yes, I agree. I think this card is absolutely fine in Web Warriors in the right circumstances. I think Gamma's the best example. It's good on Research Station, and there's other times you can make it shine. And I would happily include it in my 10 just for those particular crises. But I think you're right that different characters have different value for this. And one of the things with Web Warriors is as so much of their game plan is about being fast and avoiding damage and pushing people away. It's not about standing together in the middle of the table and taking hits, right? But we've seen some of the Shield characters. They include characters like War Machine, Iron Man, She-Hulk. Those are characters that can quite happily stand in the middle of the table and take hits. So I think you're right that potentially this card could be better suited for Shield characters. I think it also has interesting interactions with Nick Fury's leadership, where you can potentially advance and still maintain that range three because it only stops certain movement effects and from enemies, and you can still do your leadership advance. But of course, you can't move outside of range three because then you lose the effect. I mean, maybe you'll have a situation where your opponent moves you in one of the few ways they can, which is basically only bow, right? And then you use the leadership to get back in range. So it has some interesting interactions with that leadership too.
Yeah, Mysterio also can. Anyone that can get you in advance, obviously, is what can break the Web Bearers as defensive prototype. I think it's really good. You touched on it. Taskmaster is another one that I think is good to sit up there and be tanky. And again, we can... The Initiative, and it can be anyone. It can be Black Dwarf, right?
Mm-hmm. One more thing I want to say about this card. It's hard to do in Web Warriors. It's much easier to do when you can have anyone be a member of the Initiative. It has interesting interactions when you're close to enemies and you have a bigger base than them. So imagine that I have She-Hulk and War Machine, and between them is your enemy character on a small base, right? If you are between these two characters and they play this card, that character in between them has line of sight to nothing. And they have to move if they want to attack. And that move has to be a climb, so they can't move very far. And the bigger your bases are, the easier it is to engineer that and potentially hit more than one character. So if you had a character with a very large base in affiliation, which you can do with the Initiative, you can potentially set up situations where you are denying opponents actions when you play this card on top of the effects it's already giving you.
Yeah, and to be clear, that character could see the two models playing defensive prototype, right?
Nope.
Really?
Yeah.
Characters cannot draw a line of sight through these characters or through a straight line between them.
Right. So
you're right. Okay, so you wouldn't have to even be able to see the... All right, I played
exactly.
That
so if I am directly between those two characters and they are a bigger base than me, only one of them has to be bigger base, the other one has to be the same size, then every line that I draw is going to be between them, so I can't see anything.
No, it's an important last statement. Yeah, I definitely played that wrong. The worst version still felt really good. And I personally used Mysterio when they moved and I tricked some traps and moved away. But yeah, it's a powerful card. That's a great shout out there, Pat. I totally missed that. And again, love playing cards wrong. So yeah, it's a good sleeve to heave it. So I like defensive prototype. I don't rate it as highly as the other two. It's going to be a situational crisis / team card, but I think it's really powerful. And I would not be surprised if a few people absolutely love it and it becomes a staple for them.
Yeah, this is one of those cards that I would really, really want to take in my 10, but I would not take on every crisis.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. So next up for me is Eye in the Sky, an unaffiliated reactive card. When an ally character is targeted by an attack, Nick Fury may spend 3 power to play this card. Oh, defensive prototype, really, really cheap too. 1 power of 2 characters. Really like it for that reason. Sorry about that. Eye in the Sky, costs 3 to play. The targeted character makes a short advance. If at the end of the advance, it's outside of the attacker's attack range or the attacker's line of sight, the attack ends, and then if it was a single target attack, the attacker basically gets an action back. If your squad is using the Shield affiliation, return this to your available team to access card during the cleanup phase. This card seems nuts. I really like this. Like, I have so much fun with Lifesaver, and this is just real good.
Yeah. So the closest comparison with this card is from the core set, Escort to Safety, which has the same cost and the same rules text, except this card gives you an advance, not a push, which means you can't block it, right? One of the ways you can stop Lifesaver and you can stop Escort to Safety as the aggressor is you can create angles where your opponent being pushed is blocked by things like your like another character, right? And because this is an advance, that won't work. Similarly, a lot of terrain won't stop this push, depending on your character's size and whether or not they have Warcrawler or Flight. So the advance, in my opinion, is strictly better than the push. And of course, the fact that this card can be recycled is incredible. But the big downside is Nick Fury specifically has to be paying the power. And okay, he gets to do it from pretty much any range, right? There's no range requirement, which is wonderful.
Correct.
But the question is, can you get Nick Fury all the power he needs to spend three a turn on Eye in the Sky?
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that. So we haven't covered Nick Fury yet because we're still waiting for all the rules regarding grunts, right? Mm-hmm. But real quickly, Nick Fury has two builders. One is a range 3/5 dice static builder. He's just going to gain one power off of it. The mm-hmm. other is a range 2/5 dice strike with bleed and pierce and power equal damage done. He doesn't have any other way to gain additional power on his card himself.
Yeah, he does. He gets power from his grunts. He's got the Director of Shield rule.
Oh, yeah. Whenever a... yeah, that's true. But we don't have full grunt rolls. But that's fair. He does have Director of Shield. That's important. Yeah, good call there, Pat. So I worry about him being able to use three a turn on this. But at the same time, card's real strong.
Yes. And this is a card that I think would probably be playable if it was limited to once a game. It would be like an escort to safety that's easier to use because there's no range requirement and you can advance instead of push as long as you can get the power and fury. I would be satisfied with that card. I don't think it would be the best, but I would be happy enough with it. As soon as I can use this more than once, I think it's great. So I don't think you need Nick to be fueling it every turn for it to be good. I think if you can use it a couple of times a game, it's going to be superb.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's the exact same mindset I have. If you get to use this twice, it seems like a great card. It also, as Pat just talked about, combos really well with defensive prototype. There's all sorts of ways for you to get out of line of sight with defensive prototype. I don't know. It's real powerful. It's going to be a pain in the butt to play around.
Yeah. Last thing I'd say on this card is back in episode 114, we did a Sleeve It or Heave It on Escort to Safety. Mm-hmm. And we go in depth on why this effect is amazing and how it's really good at countering a lot of specific characters and specific tactics cards. And all of that still applies to this card as well. So I think this card is really great.
Yeah. Only question is Nick going to have enough power, but I think it'll be fine. I think you'll be able to use it on round 2 or 3 and then again on like round 5. And both of those should hopefully be really impactful. And if Nick is getting beat up, you might be able to use it every round.
Yeah. I should add that this is a card I would consider if I'm playing a team that uses Nick Fury outside of Shield. I would play this card if the team is good at giving Nick Fury power, right? I only get to play it once, but really nice if I can say I'm playing Brotherhood and I can give Nick Fury reliable power. Really nice to have this effect anywhere on the table whenever I need it.
Yeah, that's a great point. There's a few, Inhumans and A-Force, the other two that immediately spring to mind. And like we said, I do think the card is powerful enough to be played in a vacuum without the recycling ability. The recycling is just like gravy on top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really cool card. So which one's next, TT? You got the alphabet there next to you.
I do also like Eye in the Sky because you kind of lose a tactics card with the initiative. So being able to play it multiple times, I personally rate a little bit higher. Hard Reset is next. Shield Reactive. When an ally shield character is attacking or defending before they calculate success dice, you can spend 3 to play this card. The attacking defender characters reroll everything, including skulls. This card may not be included in a team that has recalibration matrix. So it's basically recalibration matrix.
Yeah, it's a slightly better recalibration matrix in that it also lets both people reroll skulls. That's not strictly better. You know,
yeah,
you might have.
I don't.
Yeah.
It's different, I guess. Is sure. Anyway, we're quibbling. So okay, it's what Pat and I are talking about is one of the powers of recalibration matrix is I'm attacking Pat. Pat rolled 3 skulls. I rolled a bunch of blanks. I'm gonna reroll everything. Pat's gonna reroll a couple dice. I'm gonna reroll more. This is inherent. Mm-hmm. It's one of the times we use recalibration matrix. This is reroll everything. Yeah. So the flip side occurs, right? I'm attacking Pat. I rolled 4 skulls. Pat rolled a million blocks. I want to reroll that. So two sides of the same coin. It's powerful. Recalibration matrix doesn't see a lot of play. Didn't we do a sleeve or heave it on recal?
I believe we did in episode 119, perhaps.
Which isn't out yet, but by the time you listen to this, it will be out. So I'm meh on Hard Reset. This is my least favorite of any of the cards we've covered. I it's not saying it's a bad card. It's just we've seen this card. We've seen similar effects. It costs a whole lot of power. I'm just okay with it. What about you, Pat?
Yeah, I'm also okay with it. I think the upgrade here is not that much, and the effect is absolutely fine. Like, I think I said this in our Steve It Here on my calibration metrics. I'm always satisfied to have this card, but I'm never super excited about it. It's not a card you build your game plan around. It's just a card that's nice to have as an insurance policy. I'd point out that Brotherhood of Mutants has their own version of this card called the Books of Truth, which is identical to Hard Reset, except it costs one power less to play. And that is a card that sees very little play, not because it's bad, but because Brotherhood has better cards to choose from. And I expect that Hard Reset will probably fall in the same category.
Yeah, because we're not even halfway through, and there's a lot of really good cards coming out of the Shield stuff.
Yeah.
So is there anything else about Hard Reset, or can we move on from this one pretty quick here,
Pat? Let's move on.
Helicarrier Strike. Shield, active. During its activation, an allied shield character may spend 3 power to play this card. This character may use the attack listed above once this activation. What is the attack, you ask? Well, it's a range 5 physical attack with 6 dice that costs 0 power. This attack ignores line of sight and the offending character doesn't benefit from cover. Before choosing a target, the character chooses between physical and energy for the attack. There's a wild trigger of Scorched Earth. After this attack is resolved, other enemy characters within 2 suffer 1 damage. If the attack was physical, the target character and other characters within 2 gain bleed. If the attack was energy, the target character and other characters within 2 gain incinerate. Pat, we've been kind of bullish on Team Tactics attack cards. I think there's 4 that we really like. Does Helicarrier make it 5?
Yeah, there's a lot we don't, right?
I have no idea how many we don't. Actually, there might be more than 4 or 5. There might be 6. Anyway.
I can think of a couple. But yeah, I think this one is kind of borderline for me. Things I like about it. Range 5 makes it easy to apply that attack and makes it appealing to use in situations where your character otherwise might not be able to attack. So that's nice. It might give you the option for an action you otherwise wouldn't have. I really like the wild effect. I like the area of bleed or incinerate and the fact you get to choose between those. I think that's really cool. It's quite unusual. We've only seen that once before, I think, in Illicit Tech with Crossbones and Sin.
Yeah, the Crossbones Sin.
That card is quite similar to this, and that card is quite good. So I think this card is fine. What I don't like about it, 3 power cost. 3 power cost is real steep, and 6 attack dice is not incredibly reliable to get that wild trigger that's so appealing.
Yeah, so let Illicit Tech is one of the attacking cards that I think we both like, right? I think we like Illicit Tech, Healer's Laser, Monkey Brain, Ricochet Blast. The one from the Jean Grey box where they move and you get an attack, the kind of weird one.
Yeah, Cruelty. There's a few.
Yeah, there's a couple.
Attacks that require actions, we don't have many. We've basically got Iron Man's 2 cards and Illicit Tech. And this one I think I rate a little bit less than them, but it seems okay.
3 power for a 6 dice attack with no rerolls or anything funny behind it. Okay, so we're not like punching a bunch of damage through, right? To me, the reason to take this is, just like Pat said, you're hoping for this wild trigger, and now I'm just out, personally. 3 power to hope for a wild trigger, I just don't like. Maybe if you end up with a whole bunch of rerolls on your side, I just don't like wild fishing. I would rather have Illicit Tech. I realize that's only 2 characters that can take it, because that incinerate is a guarantee, right? After the attack is resolved, right, enemies within 2 suffer the incinerate range, right? I don't like Helicarrier Strike. The other reason is, there's really good cards in Shield. We've covered a lot of them already, and you have to compare it to left and right. Like, is this going to fight its way into the roster? So I'm not saying it's a bad card. It just doesn't cut the mustard for what I've seen out there. And I personally don't like wild fishing.
So I agree with you. I think there's one thing that makes this card more interesting, and that's our old friend at this point, the initiative. The fact that anyone in your team, in theory, can play this card because they're a member of S.H.I.E.L.D., right? They put on their little badge. And for me, that's appealing in 2 ways. Firstly, free attack cards are more appealing on cheap characters whose attacks otherwise are bad. Like, if you really want Wong in your squad for other reasons, it's nice that at some point he can call in a helicarrier strike and actually have a good attack action, which otherwise is just not on his card, right? And the second, which I think will make you smirk a little bit less, because I know that's maybe a bit of a stretch. The second is this card doesn't have any restriction that some cards have, things like not allowing you to crit or reroll or modified dice. And there are lots of characters who can do good things with dice modification and can play this card. So, for example, I agree with you, crit fishing's not that appealing. But what if you have Baron Zemo or Black Panther and you're rerolling all those dice, right? Nebula, rerolling all those dice. Suddenly that crit fishing is looking much better, right?
And I realize that this isn't a direct comparison, but I'm playing devil's advocate. I'm playing two tactics cards to get there.
Yeah, I mean, the idea here, right, is the initiative is giving you enough value that you're happy to play it anyway.
Correct. Like, I'm just like, this is Black two Panther, of your five. Right?
I'm thrilled if Black Panther is rerolling one of his defense dice, counting blanks in certain situations. Happy to remove a slow or a stagger from him. You know, maybe I feel like the card itself is worth it. And helicarrier, maybe it's good enough combo. Maybe it's two tactics worth of cards worth of value for two tactics cards, you know?
Two tactics worth of cards and five power? Character. Yeah.
Five power?
Mantles too, right?
Oh, sure. But obviously, I don't know. Like, yeah, five power's a lot. It's just an example. But I do think it's a relevant one. You think that, it's nonsense?
That's fair. I just... I would just rather shield mobile next to the person than do my normal spender. But that's fine. We can helicarrier him instead. Maybe we want the incinerate. I don't like... I think we both agree the best thing about this card is that wild trigger.
Yes.
And I think it's good that you can add additional dice, right? Even illicit tech only allows you to add, I think illicit tech allows you to add crits, but not additional dice modification. I think it's great. You can build your own fishing into it, but now I feel like we're Rube Goldberging.
I can see why this card is only six dice, right? Because you can add it to characters that can do a lot of other stuff. And I think Nebula seems like the best combo in regards to being a cheap character who doesn't have a long range attack. And suddenly from downtown, she can do a very long range attack on someone standing on objective. But you're right. I think even with that stuff in mind, I don't rate it as high as some of these cards. I do think that some people will play it, though, and it'll be pretty cool when they do.
I think it'll be fun to play. You're right. Nebula doesn't have a long-range attack, but she's a long mover with a range 3, 6-dice attack with a teleport at the end of it, right? And so, I mean, the argument for using helicarrier is she attacks someone close by, dazes them, no one else is in range, so then she helicarriers them. So I guess you could do that, sure.
I mean, maybe you have Gambit, right? And Gambit gets his automatic wild trigger. There's combos here, man.
I mean, Iron Man is the one that comes to mind for me. Like, I like this with Iron Man when you tack on a Friday on the thing, if you want to end up doing it.
I mean, right? I do like that too. That's fine. Although he has a Helios laser, and I think I'd rather take Helios laser, but...
Maybe we're just taking all of them. We've got Ricochet, we've got Helicarrier, we've got Helios laser.
Why not? Fire them all off.
Yeah. Now, the other argument I've heard for this that I kind of like, and you mentioned it, and this might be... It does give you the flexibility like we talked about. Maybe Lizard ends up doing it, right? Lizard ends up high in power and like, well, I don't know, what the heck else is Lizard going to do? You mentioned Wong. Sure. Maybe. I mean, sure. Right.
Wong spends a while meditating and then calls in the helicarrier strike.
But one of the other ones I've heard is like someone like Black Cat, a character who has performed their task, is now hiding in the back, but I want to make this range 5 strike. For me, it literally just comes down. I look left and right and I just see better cards. And we can talk a little bit at the end, at 40 minutes in. Like, I just don't see how Helicarrier fights its way in.
Oh, you're so conscious of time. Don't sweat it. Yeah. I agree. It's not the best card, but I think it has its uses. I don't think it should be ignored.
Yeah, I don't think it's, like, rubbish. But in the world of Sleeve It or Heave It, I am heaving it.
Oh,
would you sleeve it? Are you giving it a heave it?
Or depends how many cards I have to put in each. I think I would sleeve it in the right team. But yeah, most of my hypothetical shield rosters right now would not include it.
I'm excited to see this Gambit, Nebula, Black Panther combo that you have.
What a team.
So we have Life Model Decoy next. Shield active. Nick Fury spends 3 power. That's a lot of power off of Nick. We talked about it. Nick gains 3 LMD tokens. LMD stands for Life Model Decoy, I think. Each time Nick Fury is made by attack, shuffle the tokens, reveal one at random. If the token has LMD in the back, you may reroll any number of the attacker's dice. If it has Nick Fury on the back, the attack continues as normal. At the end of the round, remove all LMD tokens from the character. We've seen this before. It's a convocation card. I can't remember the name of it. It's not.
It's original Doctor Strange card. It's one of his cards. Vapors of Valtor.
Sorry. I'm still going to call that a convocation card.
Yeah, I forgive you for
obscuring
not immediately realizing that Vapors of Valtor wasn't a convocation card. So, obviously, one of the things that you have to compare it to is the old card that does the same thing, and consider how unpopular that card is. I don't know that I've ever played against it.
What?
And I only played with it a few times when Doctor Strange first came out, and
Let's go over the differences, right? Vapor of Valtor requires two other characters to be within range two of Strange to use it.
Yes.
Because he's, like, illusioning them, and then you can't pick between them, right?
They're doing, like, some sort of group spell.
You're right. So this is much easier to use. I don't know. I don't really like the random effect. I'm just not a huge fan of it.
Yeah, but also Vapors you can use on any character. And correct. This one you have to use on Nick.
Yeah. The effect is... The effect ends up being similar.
The effect is totally fine. But the card is expensive and situational, and I don't love it.
I would rather have Hard Reset if I'm trying to get Nick Fury to live through a bunch of stuff. I would rather be like, you rolled real high, let's just try again. Right? Cost 3 power. It's not random. Let's just try again.
Yeah, I think this card is fine as like a dissuasion tactic that makes people not want to attack Nick. I think the problem is Nick is not a character who I especially value that effect on.
Yeah, if this was a Magneto, Juggernaut, Dormammu, sure. Well, I'm not going to Dormammu. Yeah, sure. Dormammu. What the heck? I don't care.
Yeah. Like, Nick is a pretty middle-of-the-road character where dissuading my opponent from attacking him specifically doesn't seem to achieve that much in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. If Nick had Bodyguard, Taunt, that would be cool. But yeah, it's fine. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't like
this is one that I am rating lower than the Helicarrier Strike. I'm heaving it.
So this would be the lowest one we've reviewed so far then, right? To me... Well, I guess this would be the lowest. I actually have Helicarrier as the next lowest, and then I have Hard Reset.
Okay, I have Hard Reset below them both. But we'll do this at the end. We can do a summary of what we're sleeving, what we're heaving.
Great, that one only took 2 minutes. Let's keep going. Next up, Reposition, unaffiliated active. Nick Fury may spend 2 to play this card. If an allied shield agent character is on the battlefield, place Nick Fury within 1 of that allied shield character. This card's real good. It's a teleport. Yeah. There's no qualification about him not holding stuff.
Yeah, and in theory it has unlimited range. Of course, in practice, it has a very specific place it can go. But yeah, in the right circumstance, this card is going to be sensational. And in other times, it's going to be literally unplayable because there's no shield agent on the table.
So I like the card. I actually like the card a lot. And it's a teleport. It's a unlimited range teleport in the best case situation. In the worst case situation, you can't use the card this round, and maybe you can later on in the round. It doesn't require Nick to be active, which I think is important. I really like it. I think it's a phenomenal card. Now, yes. I guess, let me be a little clear, because I've heard people compare this to Mothership or Asteroid. Nick doesn't have the same impact as moving Magneto. Right, as moving Corvus, as moving Thanos, as moving Rogue, which I've seen a lot on these new Brotherhood rosters. So it's not like Nick shows up and you're like, oh, crap. It's just like, okay, Nick's here. Here's a tactical knife, right? It's just not, it doesn't quite have the same, it doesn't strike fear into my heart like the other ones do.
No, absolutely. But having said that, it's also less cost because you're only paying it on Nick rather than also paying it on a second character like you would with Asteroid M. And it can also be used more easily to escape things, because if you have a shield agent and they're able to run to the corner of the table, that's much less of an opportunity cost than having to send one of your other characters in the corner of the table if you want your character to escape. Plus, you can escape with an objective. So yeah, I like this card too. I think it's good. I just think it's going to be extremely variable how good it is in a given game. And it wouldn't surprise me in the right circumstance. It will let you travel with an objective across the table and it will be completely busted. And in other games, you'll be looking at it at the end of the game and think, I never had a chance to play this stupid card.
And this is one I think we both reserve the right to come back to when we have the full grunt rules, because that could obviously change things dramatically here. But, you know, we couple it with the initiative. You give Nick Fury, you know, you chase down Black Cat. you give Nick Fury the civilian, and then Nick repositions, right? And you can do all of that during someone else's activation, right? You don't have to do any of that during Nick's activation, because the giving them the token from initiative and the reposition can both be played out of Nick's activation. So, yeah, I think it could be really strong. And I think you're going to have to we got a couple more cards, I guess. But how much you want to dedicate to Nick kind of being the center points of your shield army, I think it will be interesting. And that might honestly be the difference between you taking reposition or not.
Yeah, I'd also want to call out, this is one of the few cards that is not shield affiliated and gives you no benefit for being in shield. This is just a Nick Fury card. And if this card does turn out to be busted, it could be a very compelling reason to take Nick Fury in other squads.
Yeah, great point there. So, sit rep! During a shield character's activation, it may spend one to play this card. Choose another allied character within three of that card. That chosen character may move advance short. This card may not be included in a roster squad with tactical analysis. What do we think of sit rep?
I really like this card. I think tactical analysis is underrated, and having it for one cost instead of two cost is an incredible buff because of the fact that characters generate one power in the power phase and not two, right? Suddenly, I have a huge amount of flexibility on how I play this card, where in the round I play it, and the move outside of activation is potentially very impactful.
Can we do the last card and then circle back to this card?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Well, would you rather talk about sit rep more?
Well, I don't want to break your alphabetical order. I already.
No. Well, the next one's the last one alphabetically. We're making good time now.
Okay.
You're next up, stopwatch. The Shield Mobile. Shield active. An ally character may spend 3 power to play this card. The character gains flight this round, and it immediately advances long. So this is my problem with sit rep. I don't know that I want both. And if you make me pick, I like the shield mobile a lot. Flight and a long advance, that is real far.
Yes. So shield mobile to me seems great because we love climbing gear, and this is a climbing gear that lets you go long instead of short, right? It's great.
It gives you flight.
Yeah, instead of climb. But that's functionally the same thing, right? Instead of wall crawler. So I love Shield Mobile. I think it's a superb card. It is expensive, though, and the high cost does limit some of the things you can do with it, right? It cuts down a lot on turn one shenanigans with it because 3 power is just so much to pay on turn one. And the opportunity cost of using it on a lot of characters will just be high, right? The move is superb, but once your character's done that move, they are not going to be as impactful in other ways as if they hadn't, right? Because this 3 power, like, it's turning one of their spenders into a builder, or it's denying them the use of a superpower. Like, and you can't necessarily use it where you want it when you want it. All that said, though, it's excellent, and I think it's one of the very best shield cards.
Yeah, I personally rate this as the best shield card. My computer just made really weird noises. I'm sorry. I personally rate it as the best shield card. I really like it. I understand what you're saying about 3 power is a lot. It is definitely a lot of power. But sit rep / tactical analysis has its own restrictions, right? That has to be used during another character's active turn, right? You have a range restriction tacked onto it. I agree that costing one is amazing, and it's real good.
Yes.
And if you end up taking both, that's a lot of movement shenanigans, like a lot of movement shenanigans. The other thing I'll say about Shield Mobile is there's nothing preventing you from taking climbing gear too. So if you want to take sit rep, climbing gear, and Shield Mobile, you can. And that's a whole lot of movement.
Yeah.
We couple that with Eye in the Sky, and then you're just real
and
obnoxious.
The Shield Leadership.
Yeah, and then Gwen's affiliated, because why not? I mean, she doesn't even need to be affiliated.
Yeah.
But then you just have Gwen, and you're just like, nope, I'm just moving all over the place. Don't care what you do. So maybe you just double down and go whole hog in this thing. But I really like Shield Mobile. Now, I don't think it's as incredibly busted as some of the internet says, but I do think it's a very, very, very good card. And I understand the unaffiliated / initiative combos with it. Like, Thanos is the one that comes to mind, where he just like moves into the middle board, moves everyone out, double attacks someone, or honestly keeps moving.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of characters that can really abuse this. not abuse it, but really make good use out of it.
Yes.
And I don't think we're going to go through all of them, but there's a lot.
Yeah, this is the card that combines with initiative most obviously, in the sense it just says, hey, have you got a character that would be really great with a free long move? Well, there you go. Go nuts. And there's plenty of characters that are great with an extra free long move. So
yeah, the Shieldmobile Hulk on round one is not friendly.
Yeah.
Hulk activates, really? Grabs, yeah, Hulk activates, Shieldmobiles to the middle of the board, past the middle of the board, and he just starts going to town. That's not friendly. Yes. No one likes that. I mean, right. The Hulk player likes it. and saving it for late game is important well too, because as we talked about, there's no restriction on you carrying objectives or anything else on this, right? You just go wherever you want with the things you have on it. I've heard it kind of compared to Rainbow Bridge, and I think that's probably the most apt comparison I've seen out there.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. I'd also say it's really good for turn one plays defensively. Something you used to be able to do with Rainbow Bridge, and you can do with things like Climbing Gear, is you can send a tough character, like, say, Lizard or, hey, Black Panther, up to take an extract in the opponent's side of the table on turn one. And if they decide to punish you by beating you up, if they do damage to you but they don't kill you, you might have enough power to then Shieldmobile to safety, right? And that long move with flight is going to take you a long way away and potentially out of line of sight.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, to your point, you can send Lizard up, then you could send, you know, Widow behind it, sit rep Lizard, and then you still have Shieldmobile in your pocket. So maybe you do double down. Maybe you take all of them. But for me, I'm more excited about Shieldmobile, and my gut is I don't want all the movement shenanigans. But it wouldn't take much arm twisting for me to toss them all in there.
I tell you what, TT, I kind of want all the movement shenanigans. I think it's a really cool area of the game, and there are teams with movement shenanigans for sure, but no one can stack movement shenanigan cards like Shield can, right? Plus their movement shenanigan leadership, plus whatever you can get out of their characters. I think this is a cool area that I am excited to play with more. And I feel like, I don't know how it will go. Part of me thinks that multiplying movement shenanigans makes it exponentially harder for my opponents to play around them and might increase their effectiveness. Part of me thinks they might just be redundant. And I'm like, well, I don't need all these cards to do these things. But we'll see how it works out.
So, to contradict myself, I do like the idea of sit rep as a turn one play and Shieldmobile as this mid game play. I think you can end up with a lot of power out of that. And there are some characters that could, with a little bit of help, end up with a Shieldmobile round one. You know, anyone that generates two power plus a ubiquitous card in the game. Why is my brain not working? Advanced R&D, right? You get there. And there are some characters that generate three. So I like the card. I'm sleeving sit rep. I just think they kind of occupy the same space. And to your point, like, I don't know, maybe I'm overthinking it and that's too much movement shenanigans. But if playing Web Warriors with Mysterious taught me anything, is I don't know that there's too much movement shenanigans.
There you go. Agreed. Absolutely agreed.
Hey, we did it. You're right. I was worried about all this stuff for nothing, Pat. 52 minutes. We're right on time. So we are, real quick, we're sleeving Battlefield Medicine.
Yes. Sleeving that one straight away.
We're sleeving Defensive Prototype, but we don't expect it to be as ubiquitous as some of these other cards.
Yeah, I want it in my 10, but I won't take it in every game.
Eye in the Sky, I feel similar to Defensive Prototype.
Yes, I would be willing to sleeve it, but I won't lose any sleep if I don't.
Hard Reset, I think we're heaving.
I'm heaving that one. It's going in the bin. I'm sorry, Hard Reset.
Helicarrier Strike, I am heaving it, Pat.
I'm going to heave it in most of my teams, but I want to live the full reroll Helicarrier Strike dream, TT, and you can't stop me.
Okay, you know what? You've been clinging to that Daredevil story forever, and Helicarrier Strike can live in that same thing. So,
yes.
Life Model Decoy, I'm heaving it.
I'm heaving it too.
Reposition?
Now I have to remember which of Nick the movement Fury shenanigans teleport. Is repositioned. This is Nick Fury's teleport. This one for me is the hardest to evaluate. It's him only. Situationally, it's great. I'm completely not sure on this one. I don't know. I'm going to try it, but I don't yet know if it's sleeve it or heave it.
I'm sleeving it for now, but again, we've reserved the right to circle back to this when we have more Nick news. I am sleeving both sit rep initiative and Shieldmobile, with the caveat of I don't know if I need sit rep and Shieldmobile, but I'm sleeving all of those off the bat.
Yeah, I'm sleeving them all too. I think sit rep and Shieldmobile and Battlefield Medicine are the three most powerful cards. And
more than the initiative?
And initiative is potentially the most affiliation defining one. It's maybe not inherently more powerful on the table, but it defines the affiliation more in the sense it changes your roster construction, it lets you play with different characters, and it does cool combos with those other cards.
I think initiative is the most powerful and the defining, personally. I understand what you're saying, but the roster, the opening up of the roster creation of initiative to me is incredible, right? How many times people come into the Discord all the time across the bifrost.com/Discord, please join us. And they always ask us for roster advice. And one of the questions we're always asking, I mean, there's a lot of questions, is, okay, what is your team on these threat values? And a lot of newer players are like, I have no idea. And it doesn't matter if you have the initiative. Like, you play whatever you want. It's Vision. It's Wong. It's Clea. It's Ancient One. It's Hulkbuster. I don't know. The power... I kind of like Ultron. We played a three-box sounds. Ultron's real good in the core set.
Yeah, Ultron's way better.
The power you end up with out of it, to me, is incredible. So I understand where you're coming from. I don't really want to argue about it, but I love the initiative. I think it is an incredibly powerful card.
So do we agree, then, that initiative is the most defining of the Shield affiliation?
Yes, I do. Yes. Cool. Because to me, most of the worry about Shieldmobile comes from the initiative, not from Shieldmobile.
Right. The combination of the two.
The limitless potential, right? Mm-hmm. So, all right. There's our full Sleeve It or Heave It episode. And we did it, Pat. We're just in time. You're right. I worried all that for nothing. So we do want to thank each and every one of you for listening. If you want to check out our YouTube, please go to youtube.com/AcrossTheBifrostMCP. You can also check us out at Patreon, patreon.com/AcrossTheBifrost. No MCP there. And of course, please check out AcrossTheBifrost.com. We have new content creators joining us all the time. So we do sincerely want to thank each and every one of you for listening. Please let us know what we can do better, what you'd like to see, what we can do worse. And until next time, cheers and happy gaming.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Somewhere across the Bifrost, skies are that you dare to dream really do come true.